Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move, and we have our last show of 2021. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 137. Well, just ahead, people's waistlines are getting bigger, and so is the sales at Destination XL. We'll talk about how this plus-size retailer has crushed it in 2021. And let's take a look at Yellow Corporation, a trucker that's doing a great job with a turnaround and the supply chain challenges that are working to their advantage. And the most promising business unit of scientific instrument maker Agilent. We're going to look at what's going on in the bioscience field from this hardware maker with Agilent CEO Mike McMullen. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch lists and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, A-I-E-R-A.com.
And you can listen to the Drill on any of your favorite podcast platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, you name it. But don't miss a show. Click that subscribe button to make sure you're included in every one of our broadcasts.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got the business stories behind stocks on the move. It's our last chance of the year. Isaac Webster joins me as our executive producer. Isaac, I thought it'd be a good time to look at some companies that have really, where the stocks have performed in a way that really helps us take notice of the companies underneath
right.
Those stocks.
Yeah, well, let's get started. Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Let's look at Destination XL Group.
So I'm very excited to hear about this company. I've never heard about it until you brought it up today. It trades under DXLG and shares have gained over 2,100% in 12 months. 2,100%.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So if you'd asked anyone a year ago, it would have been Destination XL, it would have been Destination BK, because this thing looked like it was going to go bankrupt. It was a retailer of plus-size clothing for men that was, you know, as like all retailers, was in a real hard place last year, mostly physical stores, a de minimis online business. And I think it got lumped into the category of companies that looked like it just wasn't going to make it. The stock was getting delisted by the NASDAQ, had fallen to 50 cents a share. But behind the scenes, they were really fixing this business. And if a business analyst had taken some time to really look at this company, they could see some big changes going on. Their return on invested capital was terrible. It was negative 18% a year ago. Well, today it's positive 18%, which is fantastic. They use the tools available to them to help them capture some capital, close some stores, make some shifts that they were already making a little more online, more digital connections with their customers, even though they are a physical retailer store. They brought their store count down from 326 to 394 stores. Not a huge decline, but they got rid of some stores that just weren't going to make it. And they moved up brand a little bit. They moved from the Dockers and Wranglers, which are part of their mix still, and more upscale to North Face, Under Armour, Ralph Lauren. What's the stupid one with the whales on it? Vineyard Vines.
Vineyard Vines. I was like, wait, I know it. Yeah,
I hate that stuff. In any case, they moved upscale to that stuff. Vineyard Vines, Ralph Lauren, North Face. And that helped them sort of improve their price points as well as their returns. And they've got some fantastic relationships with their suppliers where they're able to keep their average transaction size, their ATS inventory robust enough to get through this last year. So it was very interesting to watch them kind of turn things around, pay down some debt, pay down $92 million in debt, close some underperforming stores, fix their product mix, fix their connection with customers. So that when they got to a point where the end of this year, the only thing holding them back was inventory. And even though inventory was down 32%, they saw their turnaround of what they had in the store increase greatly. Here is CEO Harvey Kanter.
I would say tailored clothing overall is not as strongly positioned as we would hope for. And conversely, Ralph Lauren, Nautica, Vineyard Vines, and which I called out, have been remarkable at their ability to get us ATS in addition to our typical on order. And what our expectation is the weather moves, and we're seeing that very much right now where it's getting a little colder. Our outerwear business has kicked in with things like Columbia or North Face. Our sweater business has kicked in. And so we feel, relatively speaking, well positioned, and we just have to keep receiving goods. Normally, I wouldn't say that, But when you're down 32% on inventory and you're turning 33% faster, it's pretty much like a grocery store. And I use that as an analogy more than anything else, but we just have to keep goods flowing.
So as you can hear, Isaac, you know, what he says is you just got to keep things going, keep things coming in the door so you can keep them coming out the door. But clearly they've made some changes and got their product mix right. You know, one of my favorite stats of the year was from the Levi's CEO, who told us that a third of all Americans saw their waistline change during COVID. Well, not all of that was down. And I think that that's Destination XL has benefited from people remaking their wardrobes. Also remaking them, interestingly, into less tailored clothing, which helps them work through inventory a little bit faster with more off-the-rack stuff.
It's a pretty impressive comeback. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Well, let's look at one of our old friends. Listen.
Pat on the back.
Patting myself because no one's here to pat my back. Builders First Source is a company that we focused on in August 16th. Mm-hmm. That is one of the best performing stocks, big caps of 2021.
Builders First Source trades under BLDR. Shares rose around 98% in a year.
Yeah, fantastic. Depending mm-hmm. on how you screen things for big cap stocks, right. Top 20, top 25 performer of the year. But a company that we focused on August 16th, as I mentioned, when the stock was up about 50% already. Now it's $16 billion market cap now, with, as you mentioned, nearly doubling in the last year, doubling in 2021. Why? Well, the macro is important here. But again, I always want to go back to the micro. It's not just that they were in the right place in the right time. They did the right things in the right place at the right time. This company in particular, making building supplies, home building going through the roof, but a shortage of supplies has hurt a lot of home builders and a lot of building supply companies. These guys saw this coming. They saw the labor shortages coming, and they changed the way they operate by prefabbing more parts. In the housing construction business, most houses are what they call stick built, which is they ship the lumber out to the site, they break out the saws, they measure it, they cut it. Hopefully they measure twice, cut once. Grandpa Johnson used to say, measure twice, cut once, saw it there, stick-built house, frame the house there on site. Well, you need skilled workers to do that, and that's one of the things lacking in the building world right now, or across the economy right now. So these guys figured out, we can do it ourselves. We can prefab a lot of the components for these houses, build them at our builders' first source supply, sell them to the housing that the builders already built so they can slap these houses up without having to deal with the labor shortages that might have otherwise prevent the houses from being built. And as a result, these specialty components allowed this company, Builders First Source, to outgrow a rapidly growing industry. Here from his interview with us on August 16th of this year is Builders First Source CEO, David Flitman.
Yeah, we've seen a great adoption of these components, which means by definition, less stick framing that's actually happening on the homes. And importantly, what we've seen is that has accelerated. In our most recent quarter, we reported a 58% organic growth in our components business across the country. That's opposite single family homes starts, which was up just under 42%. So we are outpacing the market with these unique and innovative solutions. And it's because of what we just said. There's less skilled labor. The challenges are there, and the demand has never been greater. And so we're excited about it, and we've got a long runway of growth because, as happy as I am and pleased as we've been about that growth, there's still a tremendous opportunity to penetrate the market.
Innovative labor solutions. Yeah, I mean, this had to be one of my favorite interviews you did this year.
Really?
Yeah, because, it was an unsuspecting interview to me. Like when... I didn't know
you
much about
builders. You always say that. Whenever we finish an interview, you're like, that was really interesting. I'm like, they're all interesting. If you look at the companies, they're interesting.
Well, listen, I booked it for a reason. But, you're not always going to get an interesting, insightful interview like that.
Guys are super clever, and they're really approaching this business in an intelligent way that's helping them turn some things around.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
Let's look at Yellow.
Yellow trades under Yell, YELL, and shares rose 177% in a year.
Yeah, fantastic gainer for this trucker, particularly less than full truckload shipping is what they specialize in. Now, there's, of course, this is once again, it's a chance we look at the macro and look at the micro. The macro, of course, is that shipping rates are through the roof, supply chain is low, anyone, companies are willing to pay up, individuals are willing to pay up to get the things that they want, and that has benefited this company. But this is another company that looked like it was in trouble a year ago. But in fact, they were in the midst of in the tail end of a long-term turnaround, merging a couple of brands together, adding new technologies to these companies. And it's less than truckload business. It's all about logistics and managing the technologies, managing your warehouses. They've got hundreds of warehouses and shipping facilities across the country. But they were in the midst of this long-term turnaround when COVID hits and the stimulus hits. And they took advantage of the stimulus. The payroll protection program allowed them to defer payroll tax payments into 2021 and 2022. That allowed them to increase their cash flow or keep their cash flow. And they used that to accelerate the purchase of equipment in 2020. Well, in 2020, you could buy tractor trailers like crazy, and they did. So they're updating their technology. They're merging these brands under a single roof, so to speak. And they're also buying new tractor trailers. Well, in 2021, you couldn't buy tractor trailers and you couldn't buy cars and you couldn't buy. The supply chain shortages really hit that industry. These guys had already updated their fleet. So not only did they have the trucks that they needed during this crucial time, they also had newer trucks that operated more efficiently, had less downtime, used less fuel. So it helped their profit margins, even as they're able to take price because they've got labor shortages of their own. So business came roaring back in 2021. Supply chains were tight, yes, but they did their purchasing new tractor trailers in 2020, so they got the benefits in 2021. Just as they're able to jack up shipping rates, CFO Dan Oliver had some interesting comments in their most recent conference call.
We've taken delivery of all of the new equipment. That's obviously the first piece, and that goes into service right away. So the benefit we expect to see from the new tractors, whether that's lower maintenance cost or better fuel efficiency. We start seeing that on day one. And then there's that lag time that we're probably sixth, seventh inning in of purging all of the old stuff. And along with that comes the cost of getting that to where it needs to be, pulling it out of service, all of those types of things. But, we should be completed with, that replacement exercise here in the next, 3, 4, 5 months or so. It does take some time to work through that. And there's some costs associated with it, but we absolutely are seeing the financial benefit from running all of the new tractors and trailers.
So getting rid of those old trucks, purging, always a good idea, Isaac. Say you're in a crowded closet, you just got to throw things out. Purge.
I'm in a crowded closet right now. No one out there listening can see it, but behind me I have all of my mother-in-law's clothes. But I wouldn't go to purge anything from here without her permission.
No, that'd be a poor
choice
or a spousal move. in any case, these guys purging their old trucks, taking the benefits of their new trucks, and turning this company in a different direction, pun intended. Just in time. Okay, coming up next, a really interesting company. If this was a Silicon Valley startup, I can't imagine what the valuation would be. But instead, it's an old Hewlett-Packard spinoff called Agilent. Mike McMullen is the CEO. Look, this is a cutting-edge medical technology company making the equipment that makes vaccines, advanced genomic research, drug development. If you want a glimpse of our future, you've got to check out this interview and listen to the really cool things that Agilent is doing and wonder kind of where Agilent will sit in the world of medical technology going forward. We've got all that right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down Podcast. As promised, we are joined right now by Mike McMullen. He's the CEO of Agilent Technologies. Mike, Agilent's a company that some people know, some people just don't know. It was once spun off from Hewlett-Packard, and I am thinking about regret in my career and in my life and how much time I spent as a journalist at CNBC and Bloomberg in particular devoted to the woes of Hewlett-Packard instead of the fantastic successes of what HP spun off in Agilent.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that to butter you up, but our listeners know I'm not nice. what Agilent has done
that's
has
not
been
what you
fantastic.
Told me before I took this call.
Oh, they were lying. They were absolutely lying. No, what Agilent has done to grow a business in the medical technology equipment and consumable business is frankly what HP has needed all those years. and what you guys have. How would you describe the Agilent business to the uninitiated?
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Corey, for having me on. I really have an opportunity to speak to your listeners. And if you're not familiar with Agilent Technologies, I like to say we're a mission-driven growth company, you know, where people and culture matter. And we serve some really attractive end markets, you know, driven by investments in the human condition. We help our biggest market is the pharmaceutical market. We have a life sciences business, but we also have a growing cancer diagnostics business. And, you know, we help our customers find new ways to detect and treat disease. We make the world a safer place from the air you breathe, the food you may be eating, or the water you may be drinking. And Corey, you mentioned HP. I actually started my career with Hewlett Packard after I came out of a business school. When I became CEO.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. There were some really great things about the culture.
There were some great people there.
Oh, absolutely.
The company was a disaster.
Well, I know you'll be nice. Agilent.
You seem nicer than me. I had so much fun covering the companies for so many years because it was just a train wreck from, you know, pre Carly Fiorina days to Carly Fiorina, the mergers with Compact and try to, you know, all that. It was a lot of fun for me as a journalist to cover a company that continued to trip on its own feet.
Yeah, I was in Japan at the time, 1999, when we split the company. And at the time, and I still believe it, I think we got all the great things about Hewlett Packard except the name, and we had to build our own brand. But the focus on innovation, the importance of people, importance of culture, and really making a difference for our customers, they're forming for success. In my day when I joined HP, it was one of the marvels of the world in terms of companies. But it just shows you, if you lose sight in terms of what are the drivers, what makes your company successful, you lose sight of the marketplace and the competition and customers, you can see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you got to earn it every day. And I appreciate your nice words about culture and how important that stuff is. And I 100% agree. That was the heartbreaking thing about what happened to Hewlett-Packard. Is that so many great people who had devoted their lives and their families' lives to that company in a way that I don't know we'll ever see again. But I don't care about that stuff. What I care about is the businesses that you guys are in. You know, because lots of companies can devote themselves to their culture and treating each other equitably and try to solve big problems. But what you guys are actually doing, your business of selling equipment and selling the consumables that go into that equipment, are attached to some really high growth markets. And I think that when some people think of Agilent as tied to this very old, decades old technology business, they don't see if you guys were right out of the box as a startup. First of all, I think you'd have two or three times the valuation that you have today. But I don't think people can recognize, you know, what a cutting edge business this Agilent business is.
Oh, absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. So we're innovation driven company. You talk about the end markets we serve. Pharma, biopharma. You ever hear of mRNA? We do mRNA therapeutics. So I've got
these little vaccines. To me, that was one of the most amazing things. Is why would Agilent get destroyed at the end of March when COVID hits? When the very company's machines who are going to be used to invent vaccines, whether we could get vaccines or not, were going to be Agilent machines. It seemed like the biggest no.
It was a great buying opportunity, wasn't it? You're exactly right. Not only do our machines, and I had an opportunity to speak at length in terms of the role our team had in the fight against COVID-19, but you know, back to being in some exciting new businesses, pharma, biopharma. We have a whole GMP oligonucleotide business. So what is that? We actually provide the core ingredient for mRNA-based therapeutics. And that business is on a rocket ride, growing really quickly. You think about new areas of cancer treatment, oncology, immunotherapy, the tools that are used in terms of research and ultimately in the diagnostic space, they come from Agilent. So we are some fantastic, great end markets. And like I said earlier, my opening comments, all powered by this, if you will, investment in human condition. And if anything, and by the way, I will say that culture is important, but a culture is an enabler to get results. One thing about Agilent is we're all about getting the results, and I think our track record speaks for itself. But I really believe there's a way you get the results, and through your team and the right kind of culture. And by the way, if you're in great end markets, if you win in great end markets, we do well, our shareholders do well, and it feels good to be winning. and feels good to our team. I really want the Agile team to be proud of the company they work for. And when we talk, when we tell the stories about how our diagnostic tools are used to, for example, for therapy selection on for all the Keytruda customers, people get really excited about that. You know, we had a young lady came in and spoke to our management team, talked about if it wasn't here for the NGS-based solutions that you, that's next generation sequencing-based solutions, I wouldn't be here because the test that you ran told me I was a candidate for this therapeutic. So there's a lot to be said about having your team fired up about the mission of the company and really making a 100%. Difference in the world.
So let's talk about some of these end markets, because I will say that over the course of people have asked me what I've learned in the, you know, in the few months we've been doing this podcast and 130, 140 plus episodes that we've done nearly. And I have to say the biggest revelation to me of the last, really last year, year or two has been the, that while I covered technology and software and semiconductors for so many years of my career, and that's how I thought of tech, I truly believe that we're at a point right now where you're going to see cancer treatments, genomics, proteomics, and diagnostics related to all those things as the big growth market in what we might have once called technology in the next decade plus, because we're seeing the benefits of decades of investment, particularly around genomics and understanding genomics, so that we're getting targeted therapies of all kinds. When you guys look at, you've got a part of your business called the Diagnostics and Genomics Group. How do you try to, you know, latch yourself onto that rocket and understand where that world is going?
Yeah. So first of all, we have to, it starts with having a real talented team inside the company, but it also is, it starts with making sure you have all the right contacts outside the company, working with KOLs, staying close to your customers. We have a lot of external collaborations in terms of technology development. So I think we got a really good pulse in terms of where the markets are going. I want to
back up diagnosis. When you say KOLs, you mean
a key opinion leader? Yeah, leaders.
Those people who are sort of trying to show us what's being worked on and who those people are, who's influencing purchasing and research decisions.
Absolutely. So we have a whole program, a thought leader program, and we're working with some of the leaders like in cell therapy, gene therapy. So we have a really good sense of where the market's going. One of the things, back to Hewlett-Packard, I've maintained a basic long-term research lab, Agile Labs, and they're all about looking for where technology is going in terms of what value can be delivered to our customers. So you're exactly right. I mean, there's been a number of years and decades period of time where innovation investments are going on in research tools. And this is what we do, you know, mass spectrometry, chromatography, all you know, a whole series of technology portfolio we have across the company. But now what you're seeing is that being deployed not only in research, but all ultimately into the diagnostics area as well. And I think this is the future. This is why we're so excited about the growth prospects of the company. But I also want to leave your audience with another important, and you hit it at the very beginning of our talk, which was in addition to instrumentation, we also have a very large services business, because we're also finding that you need to help your customers not only with the science of the labs, but the economics of the lab. So we've got a big recurring services business as well, in addition to, you know, a recurring business around consumables and other diagnostic tests. So there are some really... we have a very broad-based portfolio, I can't emphasize enough the importance of being in exciting end markets where there's growth.
Well, so let's take that apart a little bit. So when you talked about sort of going from research to diagnostics, what you're talking about is going from maybe 1,000 machines of a certain type sold to what, 50,000?
Yeah, multiples. I mean,
is that kind of what...
Multiples of machines, but all, even more importantly, the consumables that go with it to actually run the diagnostic test.
That in research, there aren't that many use cases. The machine isn't used as much, but when it's a diagnostic test, it's like cranking paper through a printer to go back to our HP analogy.
Exactly. Or you move into a QA/QC environment. For example, all of our machines are used for the QA/QC for vaccines. So when the production ramps, you know, they need instruments, but they also need the consumables to support for their work. But that's the whole play with diagnostics, which in addition to placing the instruments, you get an acceleration of consumables tied to that.
Now, we've seen that in the last 10 years, maybe less, in genomics, right? Where where the first the mapping of the first human genome took, you know, $1 billion in 20 years, and now you do it, you know, spit in a tube for 23andMe, mm-hmm. and you get your result for a couple hundred bucks, and it could be done in hours, right? It takes, you know, that process takes a little longer, but the process doesn't take longer. The mailing and all that other stuff takes longer. I wonder if you think we're going to get to that point when it comes to sort of other types of therapies, such as, I don't know, whether it's actual therapies and treatments beyond diagnostics in those things.
Yeah, I think the use cases for the technologies are still emerging. You know, it's very, very clear that NGS-based diagnostics is going to be a big part of cancer treatments in the future. There's some companies out there.
How so? Give me an example of what.
Well, for example, we just acquired a company last year. A great team out of Seattle, Washington area, Resolution Bio, and they have what they call liquid biopsy. So you're probably familiar with right now. Typically, when you go in for a cancer test, if your doctor believes you may have cancer, you go in and actually have to give a piece of your body, if you will, your tissue. It's called IHC, and there's a test on that. Well, the idea of liquid biopsy, it's non-invasive. You actually go in and get a blood test, and from that blood test, you can see what's going on. Now, in the case of where we're focused, it's going to be on what they call therapy selection. So, as you know, there's now the whole emergence of precision medicine, which we haven't really even talked about today, where a particular treatment is targeted at you as an individual before a physician will prescribe a particular therapeutic to treat your cancer. You have to know whether it's going to work for you. And the way it's done right now is through a sample of your tissue, as I mentioned earlier. But the whole idea of liquid biopsy, NGS-based liquid biopsy, is it's done in a non-invasive way. So we're playing, our play here is we're going to be in the what they call therapy selection side of cancer diagnostics, as what they call MRD. Throwing a lot of terms out of here, but it's the minimal residual disease. So in other words, you've been treated. Has it come back or not? So this is, right. Unfortunately, so many of us have been touched by cancer, either with friends or family. And to be part of a solution here is just really energizing for our team. And I will say it's also going to be, it presents a great growth opportunity for the company.
Why is that happening now? Why is it happening in 2021, 2022? I really do feel like this is a critical point in that battle against cancer.
Well, I think what's happened is, it's not an overnight success, right? It's a byproduct of the ongoing development of new therapies in the pharmaceutical companies, particularly fueled by the biotech companies, and also the evolution of a product from companies like Agilent, where historically they were only used in research areas, and the technology can now be used as part of an overall therapy selection program, as I mentioned earlier. But in general, there's a much more of a push of our tools into the healthcare-focused arena. In fact, last year, Agilent hired its first ever chief medical officer as an indication of where we're going as a company.
That's interesting. Yeah, pharma and biotech in the last quarter, 36% of sales, whereas diagnostics and clinical end markets, which I guess we can kind of lump that together at 15%. It sounds like what you're suggesting is that ultimately the diagnostics and clinical end markets will grow to be a much larger part of the pie than pharma and bio, because pharma and bio is kind of is at the entrance to that funnel, but not the at the giant end where everything else.
Yeah,
is
I think there's still going to be a very healthy spend in the R&D side of biopharma, but you know that's the long term bet with the company. And if you look at the combination of our biopharma, pharma, and diagnostics business, you know it's well over half of the company, and the profile of the company has really changed over the last 6 or 7 years. One thing I'd also mention, we haven't touched about on this at all, we also service the what I call the safety markets, you know, food safety, environmental testing, as well as the chemical and energy markets. There it's a nice leverage play for us, where these core technologies that I've been talking about that have been developed for the pharmaceutical markets are also can be used and are applicable to the other end markets we serve as well.
I told you I wasn't going to talk about stocks, and I don't really care about stock price and things, but as you grow the business and you look across the competitive landscape, you see, you know, darling stocks like Illumina, darling companies like Illumina, which is growing at a fantastic rate, but it's got twice the price to sales to yours. When you look at the growth rates assigned to or the valuation assigned to some of those much smaller companies that have interesting diagnostic solutions, does that just exclude them from the notion you might ever want to acquire businesses like that? That you've got to kind of grow in places that they're not?
Yeah, well, we've been executing what we call a build and buy growth strategy. Historically, Agilent back to the Hewlett Packard roots, was very focused on internal innovation and R&D investment. And we still invest more than our average our peers in R&D. But as we really have built this company up, we've been also buying, adding, you know, fast-growing segments, fast-growing companies with great teams in segments of the market where they have a technological edge out there already. So I mentioned Res Bio, for example, in liquid biopsy. Right. We also built a $400 million plus cell analysis business, which really all is all through acquisition. So we see acquisition as part of our overall story, but we want to make sure that we stay in the part of the market for M&A that really works for us, and that is making sure that we don't overpay for things, that we really focus in the private space where many of the founder companies, the founders of these companies, are very much attracted to having their team become. Of course, they want a fair price, but have their team be a part of Agilent.
No, sellers don't want a fair price. Sellers want obscene prices.
the multiples. That's why you have to stay disciplined right now. The multiples are a little bit odd, but I think high, but you're starting to see some movement backwards. I think, and so you got to trade it to intrinsic value. So
it's just fascinating that, again, that you see a company that's getting all the buzz, like an Illumina, like my friends at Seer, right, which are on the edge of some really interesting things. Yeah. And yet, but you're saying that the public company acquisition is a less likely route for you.
Yeah, no, we're going to stay in the private space. That's where we do real well. We've been, we've done, and our shareholders really like the types of deals we've been doing. And listen, we've had our own nice run in terms of how the market cap of the company has gone from, I think it was like 10 or 12 billion when I came into mid 40s, close to 50. So we have a model that works. We're going to outgrow the market. We're going to keep work on our margins, and then use our. If you've looked at our balance sheet, we have a really strong balance sheet, and we're going to continue to use that in what we call a balanced way. But I would tell you, I think the secret sauce of the company's success is the culture and the team. I always say great results don't happen by accident, and it's how you work as one team. You collaborate. And I always tell my team the goal of collaboration is not a collaboration. The goal of collaboration is great results. And we've got, the operating margin up 700 basis points since we started what I call the new Agile. Yeah. When I came as CEO. I think we've doubled our organic growth rate. And we're really looking to deploy more capital to add even more fast-growing businesses to Agilent.
It's a sight to behold. And to your point, I think when the work that you're doing is not figuring out, new kinds of emojis, but actually figuring out how to cure disease.
Oh, absolutely.
And give people a better quality of life. It's got to motivate everybody up and down the team.
Oh, absolutely. And, that was my journey into HP and Agilent. I'd gone to business school in Philadelphia, Penn, and, at Wharton, you go to Wall Street and consulting. They're like, okay, I decided to turn that down and go work for HP because I really wanted to be part of a mission-driven company. And I would tell you where people and culture matter. And just a quick story here, Corey, is, pandemic hits. I wasn't around in 1918, so I have no idea what happened 100 years ago. So there was no real playbook here for us to operate under. So we went back to our core values and as our guiding principle. And one of the first things we did back in March of, 2020, we guaranteed everybody's job. We said your health and safety is number one. There'll be nobody laid off because of COVID-19. There'll be no anybody will lose their base salary. And then the second thing you need to do is answer the call for our customers. And for us, that was a real defining moment for the company because I like to say everybody has great slides. They tell you how great their team is, and they have pictures of all the smiling employees, and our people are really important. What do you do when you have a crisis? And I think we demonstrated that to our team, during the COVID-19 outbreak. And we've been continuing to receive very high marks from our team. Our employee engagement is really off the chart, best in class. And why is that important? That translates into great results. So I think if you create the right environment with your team, clearly you have to have the right strategy. If you got the right environment, the right team, and the right strategy, you win in the market.
Mike McMullen is the CEO of Agilent. Mike, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome, Corey.
When the drill down continues, we're going to have that one number that tells us a whole lot about Agilent. That's right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And maybe you got a smart speaker for the holidays. Take that thing to a test Asset Smart Speaker to play the Drill Down podcast. You get behind the very latest business news behind stocks on the move.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. Isaac, as I mentioned, this company, what they're doing is fascinating. The rate at which they are growing shows that they're really capturing market share here. In particular, I'm interested in the diagnostics and genomics group. It did $1.3 billion in revenues last year in fiscal 2021. But here's that bite. The growth rate of that diagnostics and genomics group at Agilent grew at 24% year over year. Again, that's on a $1.3 billion revenues in the last year, growing at 24%. Just fascinating growth in this area that is so important for the future of medicine and cancer diagnosis and genomics. And these guys are right there making the gear and the consumables that's going to grow that field.
It, and also, you know, you can't help but listen to this CEO and walk away with a little bit of confidence, and we'll at least know why investors are confident in his leadership.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to see a different level of innovation in medical technology and in particularly in cancer and Alzheimer's, and we're going to see that stuff just skyrocket in the next 10 years because these machines are going from schools to the labs to the actual labs where the stuff's being put to work. That's going to mean big growth for this company and its competitors. As well as big developments in those fields. All right, you've been listening to the Drill Down Podcast. We are so grateful for having you with us today and indeed all of 2021. It's been a big one, but wait till next year, even bigger. Thanks to Isaac Webster, our executive producer. Ben Wilson is our editor extraordinaire, I should say. Grateful for both of you guys. Nikki is that dog barking in the background. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.